Welcome to the College Basketball Bonanza on a Thursday night. My name is Nicholas Hodel, live from the Pac-12 Men's Basketball Tournament at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas after a really interesting quarterfinal Thursday. Joining me tonight, Blaze broadcaster Dylan Nichols. First off, Dylan, again, thanks so much for the time and the after dark slate. Always a thrill to have another Blaze broadcaster beside me for the nightly recap here at the Pac-12 Tournament. Like we did last night, we'll break down in depth the four games tonight. You had the first two games of the day alongside Jonah Crowell.
Yep.
For Blaze Sports, and they were both, all four games, I should say, were very entertaining games. All four of them.
Absolutely. It was a great slate of basketball. All four games from start to finish were fantastic. First two especially, I'm a little bit biased because I had to call those games, but those ones were really good matchups, and I'm really excited about what the semifinal holds for us tomorrow.
Yeah, for the Colorado-UCLA game first. The scoreline at the end does not tell the story.
Nope.
It's a UCLA 11-point win, really buoyed by Tad Boyle getting two technicals back-to-back, getting ejected. And really, he was really getting in the face of those officials there when he got both those technicals in back-to-back style. But Colorado got off to a terrific start in this game. I mean, that really gave them a big lift. There was a huge section of Buffalo fans pretty much right next to where we are here at the press section here at T-Mobile Arena by the south baseline. And they were pretty much right next to where we are right
yep.
now. So they were really getting this Colorado team really getting up there. And UCLA early on was not really matching Colorado's efficiency, even when Colorado was getting cold themselves.
Yeah, Colorado did a very good job of just hanging in with UCLA. It never really felt as if the number one seed UCLA, you know, a very talented team, but they could just not pull away from Colorado. They were just pesky that whole first half. They were hitting big shots pretty consistently. They had great use from their bench. They had a few different key players coming in. Just at the end there, kind of just felt like UCLA had the talent to pull away in that second half. But in that first half, man, Colorado, they were dynamite. They were constantly on. They were putting the pressure on UCLA, never letting them breathe. It was a great performance by Colorado. And as you said, that 11-point difference at the end there does not tell you the story of this game.
Yeah, 58% shooting from Colorado in that first half. And really, both these teams had really good shooting performances. This was an efficient first half. It was a high-level first half. Probably one of the better halves of basketball I have watched in person at any venue, anywhere. So that means a lot. I mean, given I have really seen a lot of basketball games this year, not
Absolutely.
Just Arizona State games,
of course,
but certain other games as well, and certainly a terrific first half. And UCLA, they were trying to really get into this particular game in the second half. You know, they were taking advantage of a drought from Colorado, some turnovers, and really a Colorado fan base that was, quite frankly, on edge with some of the officiating that was going against Colorado at certain points there. And Colorado, they were able to get over that drought, quickly get back within this game. And then really, for me, the nail in the coffin was Jaime Hawkins, his AM1 with a buck 21 to go. That to me was pretty much the dagger within this.
And Jaime Hawkins also was another reason why Colorado was able to stay in this game, it felt like, for so long, was Jaime Hawkins did not have a very fast start to this game. But as we closed out towards the end, I mean, he did what he does. He's the Pac-12 Player of the Year for a reason. 16 points, 9 rebounds. I mean, he had a fantastic game. And as you mentioned, that and one really did feel like a nail in the coffin for Colorado's hopes.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And really, the main star of this game was Amari Bailey.
Yep.
Yeah, he broke his season high in scoring tonight with 26 big ones for the Bruins. His previous high was 24 points at Oregon State back on February the 9th. And that point right there is a key tipping point within this season, because after that particular game, he's only scored 10-plus in two of the previous seven before the Pac-12 tournament. Comes in here with 26 points. Tiger Campbell with 18. Hot guys, like you mentioned, with 16. A near double-double for him. Bona has to double-double with 11 and 10. And it feels like performances like tonight from Amari Bailey are going to be so huge for this UCLA team without Jalen Clark the rest of the way. It feels like if guys like Bailey can step up and do that, whether it's him, whether it's Bona, and you get that kind of performance alongside a good night from Hawkins and Campbell, it feels like UCLA is in a really good position to make magic happen this month.
Yeah, definitely. And as you mentioned, Jalen Clark not being there, it really didn't seem like UCLA. Like, he's a very talented player, defensive player of the year in the Pac-12, but UCLA's defense was still nasty. They were playing tight. They were playing relentless. They did not give Colorado a ton of space. And as you mentioned, Amari Bailey, 26 points, but the rest of the starting group around him, besides David Singleton, who was in for the injured Jalen Clark, the rest of that starting four, they really played well. Hawkes, Campbell, and Bona, as you said, just a really great performance from the guys who have been performing all season long for UCLA.
Yeah, and of course, the condolences to Colorado. They played fantastic basketball over the last couple of days. Tristan De Silva once again coming up with 17 points, 6 boards, and Julian Habenhood has played a really good tournament with 14 points, 6 assists, 4 boards. I really thought that for Colorado, Julian Habenhood was right up there with Tristan De Silva in the most valuable category, just based on what he was able to provide this team for the last couple of days.
Yeah, he has done a very good job of running this offense, running the offense through him specifically. There never felt like a moment where they were just trying to feed De Silva, other than in those last second moments where they absolutely needed a basket. They were very comfortable letting Hammond work, shot 6 of 10 for 14 points. He was dishing the ball very well. I was very impressed with how Julian Hammond III played in this one.
Yeah, and one of the things Nick Cronin said postgame, not necessarily on Hammond, but really the whole team. Colorado had guys making shots. They spread UCLA out.
Yeah.
And that was really a big thing, getting UCLA in an uncomfortable position compared to what they had normally done. So that was a big, good job for Colorado there, but just wasn't really enough. And one of the things that Jaime Hawkes said after the game, which I thought was really interesting, they're still trying to figure themselves out without Jalen Clark. And to be able to get a win over Colorado like this, a really good defense, especially in Pac-12 play, I think that's going to give UCLA a lot of confidence going into tomorrow in the semifinals and if they win the semi, the Pac-12 championship, and moving forward in March Madness. Because, I mean, you get this team some time in a Pac-12 tournament, really figure themselves out without a true penalty outside of a conference tournament that I'm sure matters to the Bruins. But the big picture is, they're a contender to win the national championship in Houston.
Absolutely. And when Hockey is saying that they're still trying to figure things out, what I look at is maybe they're still trying to see what they can get from a fifth offense or just a fifth player in general. David Singleton, a veteran, he's played for quite a few years now, been at UCLA. I believe this was his fifth year with the team. He played 35 minutes, gave him 6 points. Very solid performance. Nothing to, turn your nose at. But off the bench, not a ton going for UCLA. They had just 3 bench points in this game. All of their success really came from that starting five. So I'm interested to see kind of going into the future, going into the big dance in March, what is the depth going to look like for UCLA? Are they going to have guys that they can rely on, or are they going to have to rely on this starting five kind of going full force throughout the whole tournament?
Yeah, and certainly for UCLA, that bench battle you mentioned, Colorado won that 24-3 off of performances from Ethan Wright, who had 10 with 4 boards, and Jalen Gavinon with 12 points and 3 assists. So the bench played well for Colorado, really gave the Buffaloes a really good fighting chance, but ultimately not to be for the Colorado Buffaloes as UCLA gets the job done. Then we'll go to the second game you had the chance to call. You had both of them in the afternoon session here in Las Vegas. Oregon getting the job done, but this was one that I thought Oregon should have been able to ride into cruise control. Washington State did a fantastic job, especially in the second half from 3, 6 of 11 from deep for the Cougars in that second half to get back into the game, grab a lead for a short period of time. Ultimately, Oregon would win this thing by 5, 75-70. But this is certainly a game for Washington State before we go into Oregon. Really good balanced performance. Kind of exactly what Wazoo coach Kyle Smith was really looking to have. Looking to have a balanced performance. Probably would have liked to have had a deeper performance than really only having 6 guys play 11-plus minutes.
100%.
But ultimately for Washington State, that is not a bad performance whatsoever.
No, definitely not. And when you look at, as you said, this was a huge comeback for Washington State. At one point, they were down 19 points in that first half with 5 minutes to go. They managed to cut that down to make it an 8-point lead at the half. And to me, when I was watching this game, and we talked about this a little bit during the break, Washington seemed so determined that they would be able to attack Nafali Dante in the paint. They thought, or it just felt watching this game, that they felt like they had the manpower to get into the paint, get shots up, maybe draw a foul, but it was not going for them. Nafali Dante is such a good defensive center, playing in the middle of that paint. and he was just really rejecting them. It was kind of later on in the game when they started creating more separation, knocking down some deeper shots, that that's how they found themselves coming back into this one.
That was a mistake.
Yeah.
That was a big mistake.
It didn't work, and then they kept trying it, and it kept not working.
Because Navale Bonta, man, he's a huge guy. Yeah. I mean, he's a really tall guy. And Washington State, outside of Muhammad Guy, he just doesn't have that.
And even Muhammad Guy, who he and Navale Dante maybe height-wise line up, Navale Dante still has about 40 pounds, at least according to listed weights. 40 pounds on him, and there were several times where Gay got his. He did a great job tonight, but there were moments where you could see he is trying to back down on Navale Dante, and Dante was not giving him ground.
Yeah, I mean, and then that first half, and then Washington State was 10 of 29 from the field. Half of those makes came from deep.
Yeah.
So they were really 5 of 17 from inside the arc. That's not good for anybody within the grand scheme of things there. But again, it's fair play to Oregon, and particularly Infante Dolly, for Dante, I should say, for really getting that job done. And then the Cougars, like I mentioned, they really brought that thing back. And, of course, we have to talk about the blocks at the end of that game.
There
from Oregon,
were so many of them. That DJ Rodden, that one was just beautiful to watch.
Oh, my God, that was unbelievable. Because I was thinking during that point, sitting front row here at the south baseline, I'm thinking, okay, Oregon's going to go on, dunk this thing in this good-luck defied. That's going to be the dagger. No. It was a beautiful block from behind. I mean, that, and it was 100% clean.
Clean.
100% clean.
Just such a hard block to make. It's moving so quickly. And Rodman, credit to him, man. That was a beautiful play to watch.
Yeah, that was absolutely unbelievable. And for the Cougars, you have to go to the final 336. That scoring drop there at the end. That was what did it for the Cougars. And so that was a lot on Oregon. That was to really lock down their defense, do an excellent job of making sure they were able to do what they were able to get their job done. And Washington, they were able to find that way to attack Oregon eventually, but it was just they found it. And then Oregon blocked it off completely in the final 336. But to get to Oregon, and Valle Dante with 16, you had some really good performances, particularly from Keyshawn Bartholomew of 17. He was really, really good for Oregon within this game, getting that bench spark, which allowed Oregon to dominate that battle 28-3.
Yeah, that was a big sticking point for me, was that Oregon just seemed to be a much deeper team than Washington State was. You know, Coach Kyle Smith seemed very committed to just keeping his starting five on the court. They were really the only ones creating a ton of production. And, yeah, Oregon just had a bunch of different guys they could choose from, especially in the big man department, whether it was Navale Dante, Nate Biddle, Kalel Ware. He played less than 9 minutes, but he still had a major impact on this game. Went 3 for 5, had a three-pointer make, 7 rebounds in less than 9 minutes. Great performance by him. Just a ton of great depth on that Oregon squad, and that was a really big focus for them.
Yeah, that really was. I mean, it was a really good job from Oregon, just kind of knowing what they had and just really able to really take care of business. And Dane Altman postgame, we talked about that first half. Washington State goes out to get a 10-0 run, get that thing back within a comfortable margin, and he admitted that was a mistake from Dane Altman. So really good, and trust me, recognizing that now is going to be a huge factor, because against UCLA, you cannot let that happen.
Nope.
You can't let that happen. And we saw, and we'll talk about the Stanford-Arizona game, Stanford's coach Jared Hosley kind of fell into the same trap a little bit against Arizona, which was even more egregious, and I'll talk about that in a second. And Valle Dante had an incident there late in that game, couldn't put some weight on his right leg coming off.
Yeah, it was a scary moment seeing him kind of get injured. Thankfully, saw him later after the game. He was walking around on his own power. I believe in the post game he said he just needed some ice on it, but we will see what if he's working at 100% tomorrow against UCLA.
Yeah, he did say that he was really okay. And one of the things I was really interested about, and it kind of struck my eye, is that he was not actually as worried about blowing that 19-point lead as one may think he was, because of the three-point threat of Washington State. He said, quote, no lead ever safe with them. And kind of what I mentioned, the 54% shooting from deep for the Cougars in the second half, you can kind of see why he would really say that.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's really up to Oregon to shut that down, and that's exactly what they did. And it was huge to get into the semifinals. But, again, also he said, need better second-half defense. Well, yeah, if you don't have second-half defense against UCLA, it's not like Arizona, but they travel well, you know? So
definitely,
you're going to hear the pressure coming from the stands here at T-Mobile Arena, and that's something that's really going to be exemplified to a certain point, should that get into a very interesting position there. We go over to that Stanford-Arizona game I was mentioning earlier, and this is actually why I thought a decently solid played game from Stanford. Did it not end up going Stanford's way in the end? Arizona made a few more good plays there to grab the victory. But certainly this is a case where I was worried from Stanford from the jump, just hearing the environment. A lot of this environment we've heard all week here at T-Mobile Arena, because the Arizona fans, they traveled really, really loud. And Stanford, yeah, they had some fans, you know, the typical fans behind the bench, I think another section, the opposite baseline from where we are. It was really just kind of drowned.
Yeah.
Compared to the idea of the Arizona fan base just taking the place over.
Yeah, it really did feel like we were in Tucson tonight, because that was just that crowd was unbelievable. Just every basket for U of A was just a massive moment. The place erupted at every major shot. Just really was fascinating to see just how well those Wildcat fans traveled.
Yeah, that was absolutely the case. And Cedric Henderson Jr., I know we talk a lot about TBLS and Bottle of the front court, but Cedric Henderson Jr. with 23 points, now his season high, breaking the 20-point game he had against Utah Tech back in the very third game of the year. He's had some good performances as of late. The 19 points against ASU in Tucson, had a couple of duds against USC and UCLA in the Los Angeles trip. But he is certainly starting to play some good basketball at the right time, as he has got into the routine of starting for Arizona. And just a really good performance here from the Campbell transfer. Performances like that from him, you know, 8 of 13, 3 of 5 from deep, the 23 points, really showing his presence. And I think that's huge for Arizona, just finding that backcourt presence when guys like Carter Carissa and Courtney Ramey, though he had 15 tonight, when those guys aren't shooting quite as well, they're going to need Henderson to really get the job done.
Yeah, and Henderson was great on both sides, had 3 steals as well to go with those 3 assists he had. I mean, he was just phenomenal. There was just never a moment in this game where even when Stanford did take the lead, I think there was 11 lead changes in this one, even when the score was kind of going back and forth, it never really felt like Arizona was in trouble, and they led for the majority of this game. And I'm excited to see what this U of A team can do, because as you mentioned, we talk about that backcourt duo, but there are some really good players on this team, and I'm excited to see what they can do going forward.
Yeah, I am too, man. That performance really from Arizona, it was a little dicey at some certain points. Stanford was really applying the pressure, especially in later on that first half.
Yeah.
I mean, after Arizona got off to a couple of runs, a 15-2 run early, and then a 14-3 run, Stanford just kept making threes. That was their equalizer. Well, the three-point game.
Yep.
Arizona really wasn't doing it very well. Stanford was making those big shots. 8 of 15 in the first half for Stanford. Arizona, a respectable 4 of 12, but nothing like the 8 of 15 that Stanford Carter area to put on. My big problem with Stanford, a lot of times in that first half in particular, they were making these lob passes to Balo,
yep,
and it was pretty much easy conversions. And you saw a lot of very similar deals happening in the second half. I'm thinking to myself, why was there hardly any major adjustment to that? Because that was really a primary point of Arizona's offense. I personally did not understand why that was not something they tried to adjust for. And you saw Stanford try to make some attempts to go up and grab it, but they were too early or too late. Such an interesting thing to me that was just not able to go the way that they had hoped.
Yeah, and they really just struggled to defend the paint all night. 54 points in the paint for Arizona. Ballo was feasting, 10 of 13 with 24. I mean, yeah, you said it best. Coming out of half, it just felt like Stanford knew exactly what they were going to do, and they still just had no answer for it.
Yeah, that was such an interesting thing there. And for Ballo, again, as an exceptional performance. The 24 points, one of his better performances since December for him. And for Arizona as a whole, their efficiency on offense was fantastic for them. That final percentage, 63.8%, that is going to go down as the second highest Pac-12 tournament single-game field goal percentage in Arizona.
Wow.
Not quite get into the 67.2% they had against Oregon State back in 1989. But this one will go down as second within that particular point, breaking the 61.1% mark in March of 1988.
Wow.
So just an exceptional, exceptional efficiency performance for the Arizona Wildcats, and certainly one that I think the Wildcats will take a lot from, learn quite a bit from there. And if you had to say Arizona had to work on one particular thing for the semifinals, just based on what you saw against Stanford, I know you weren't calling the game necessarily, but what would you say that is?
Just kind of looking at the box score and looking at what I can see, they're another team that they did not rely a ton on a deep bench. They had two guys coming off the bench in Larson and Boswell, and they played significant minutes, so there was rotation and there was different lineups and everything like that, but I feel like in tournaments like these and in the big dance coming up, you want to have a lot of different options you can turn to, and in this game they did not really do that. They stuck mainly with their primary, you know, 5 to 6 guys, and then Kylan Boswell got in for about 15 minutes. So I want to see them kind of utilize, I want to see what kind of different lineups they can put together to try and attack these teams going forward.
Yeah, and particularly inside, Tommy Lloyd out to the game, so they did a much better job finishing.
Yeah.
Especially inside that points in the paint battle, 54-22 in favor of Arizona, was almost completely flipped in the game that Stanford upset Arizona earlier this year. So that is going to be a really, really interesting situation there for them. And, you know, they did get the question of, were they hungry to play ASU? And they said about that time, not knowing the ASU-USC result, that no, they're still two good teams, both of them, particularly Courtney Ramey after the game. But guess what? They're getting the Sun Devils. It's going to be an incredible
match.
Yeah, it's going to be an incredibly raucous atmosphere. This was one of the more shocking performances I think I've seen from Arizona State. And I say that not because of the defense, because I think we're both used to the defense being really, really solid for Arizona State. But offensively, there was threes raining. I mean, this was not quite to the level of Oregon and Michigan, but the offense was in a really good spot with the ball movements and the threes that are being made. And the way they played the second half, they hardly ever let that thing slip away. USC made some threes down the stretch to make it a closer game. But overall, that second half, what felt like ASU was in control.
It was – you've watched a lot of ASU, so I know you know what I'm talking about. It's insane to see this team consistently hitting threes. It is insane. Dez Cambridge Jr., what a performance by him. But, yeah, it just seemed as if these shots that we've seen them take time and time again and just clang off the rim, but they were knocking them down. They were doing such a good job. And like you said, just threes raining down, 14 of 32. More than half of their buckets in this game were three-pointers. I mean, just incredible shooting. I hope I can see it again at some point. But, man, that was phenomenal job offensively by Arizona State.
Yeah, and those are the kinds of games that – that really inspires that confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. And, you know, everyone was making threes. You know, Alonzo Gassing was making threes. And I think for a lot of people who watch Arizona State know that when Alonzo Gassing touches the ball, usually disaster happens.
Yep.
No. He was making some critical threes. And that was – it seems like we're saying it a little more often than we should with a player like him. But that was truly just unbelievable. And, you know, the poise they showed in that second half – they just didn't let anything slip away, you know? I mean, outside of the threes from USC, when they got down to, I think it was the closest four. But really, it was controlled. I mean,
if they were
losing the segment between media timeouts, it was only by a point or two each time. And that was, I thought, an exceptional job. I guess she really knew what was on the line today, I thought. And they did an exceptional job. The 77-72 final score, I don't think, tells the story.
No, ASU really, I mean, especially when you think about in the last minute or so, USC just started knocking down threes. They as comfortable as a lead as it felt, that last kind of minute or so when USC just kind of starts knocking down some threes pretty consistently, they were looking for Peterson in the corner to try and get him shots. That kind of made it a little bit uncomfortable. But, yeah, as you said, man, they did such a good job. It never felt like they were losing control. It never felt like it was unraveling. There were a couple of moments where some players were discussing on the court, a little bit of an argument, especially after that flagrant one call. But other than that, man, I am extremely excited to see what this semifinal matchup looks like, because if this ASU can show up again, I mean, that's – That's a really good team that we just watched play tonight against USC.
If this ASU offense shows up again, I think they'll be able to do a really good job of controlling the atmosphere in T-Mobile Arena in this building. That's an incredibly important point. That was the thing I was worried about for Stanford. I was telling some of my friends. I think one of them knew they were talking about Stanford keeping it close, but I was really worried that Stanford couldn't allow runs. Mm-hmm. They needed a lot of silencing possessions, which Stanford got.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think Arizona State's really going to need. They're going to need a lot of those silencing possessions if they want to really achieve their ambitions and get the job done. But really, just an incredible game at the right time. I think you're going to see a lot of people say, regardless of what happens, unless it's a blowout. I mean, we've seen teams like Pittsburgh get blown out to Duke, and now their status is in very much a limbo. But outside of a blowout loss, I think ASU can be seen as a team that should be hearing their name on the selection show this coming Sunday.
I definitely agree with you. I mean, this, especially when, again, this was just such a big win against a very talented USC team. They were the number 3 seed in the Pac-12. I think if I were on the committee, and obviously I am a bit biased, but yeah, I think Arizona State should certainly be, at the very least, one of the last 4 in.
Yeah, you know, I think there are some questions still as to whether this win will remain in Quadrant 1. USC is 48th in net. So, again, all it takes for USC to go down 3 spots is going to Quadrant 2. But you look at those Quadrant 2 wins. I mean, it's Michigan. There are several other Q2 wins. You know, some of the Q1 wins that are just hanging on for dear life that have remained there.
Yes.
I mean, Colorado, the week they've had, I think, was huge for ASU and getting that one to stay in Quadrant 1.
For sure.
Certainly a big, big task there. And, you know, I mean, barring a blowout loss here in this building tomorrow night, I think ASU should be hearing their name called on the selection show. I'm just going to put that straight up. A couple quick questions for you, Dylan, before we leave this here and we get you on the podcast platform. So Nick Kennedy with some breakdown of the other action here today, because there's a lot of other stuff going on with the bubble and the major power conference tournaments. What was the best game you've seen today of the 4?
I'm going to go with Colorado and UCLA. It was just such a nice, like, tight game. It was so surprising to see Colorado hang with UCLA the way that they did. It's like you said, that first half, it was every single time that a team hit a big shot, the other team had an answer for it. There was never a moment in that first half where it felt like one team had the edge over the other, even when you consider the disparity in the two teams. That was such an enjoyable game to watch. I really, really liked that game, liked what I saw out of both of those teams.
Yeah, certainly a good game there. For me, Washington State and Oregon really catches my eye.
100%.
With the way that Washington was able to show poise and get back into that game from 19 down, you know, that the final minutes in the first half, and you're down big like that, those get amplified. You don't want to go into the break down a ton, especially in a conference tournament like this. Wazoo got it back to within 8, and then they really started putting the pressure on Oregon. They were able to get to the inside and attack Oregon in ways that they hadn't in that first half. And, of course, we mentioned the two big blocks there in the end, the two big sequences there were unbelievable to see play out. So that one definitely gets it for me. That one is certainly right up there as well. Those are kind of like 1A, 1B, really, to me. And then that ASU-USC game was really just a really – it was a fun game.
It was a great slate. All 4 games today were fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you will be very hard-pressed to find a slate of 4 games at a single site within this quarterfinal Thursday throughout the country that were better from a collective viewpoint than the one here in Las Vegas, the T-Mobile Arena. You will be very hard-pressed to find a better quarterfinal slate better. And I think that's going to make the semifinals, UCLA and Oregon, and then Arizona and Arizona State, so incredibly compelling. I'm not going to ask for picks from you, but what do you think the keys for really all 4 of those teams are going to be tomorrow?
So I believe for UCLA, it's kind of going to be the same thing that we saw against Colorado, where what can that top 4 do? What can Jaime Jaquez and Amari Bailey and Tiger Campbell and Adem Bona do? But also, are we going to see anything more out of David Singleton or Mack Etienne or Dylan Andrews, who got some rotational minutes? I think for Oregon, a big question will be, you know, he says he's fine, but will Nafali Dante be 100%? Because he is such a big part of that, literally. I mean, he's about 7 feet tall, so he is a big part of that team. And I'm really interested to see if he is going to be 100%, how he is going to handle that matchup against the big man, Adem Bona, because Bona – you know, 11 points. He had 11 total points, 10 rebounds. He made his presence known, and I want to see what he can do going up against Infali Dante. As for the Territorial Cup rematch in the semifinals, I think for ASU, how can they handle the crowd? Because if it's anything like it was tonight, and if I had to guess, I would say it's probably going to be even worse for Arizona State compared to how it was for Stanford. Just, you know, I don't think
it's
U of A fans
nasty.
Like Arizona State that much, and they are going to let ASU hear it. So can they keep their composure? Can they not make just the stupid mistakes that we've seen this team make from time to time? And for Arizona, I think that's going to be, can they force mistakes? Can they take advantage of the little things that ASU might do wrong because of the crowd advantage that U of A will have? If Arizona can take advantage of that, dominate the paint like they did tonight, that's going to be their focus. And I think ASU, again, it's just going to come down to that crowd. How are they going to handle it mentally? Because to me, the mental aspect for ASU is so much more important than what they have, because talent-wise, they have a really good roster.
Yeah, the one thing I'll add on to that before we wrap things up for our live listeners here on our Twitter at College Bonanza, Stanford, the way they handle the atmosphere today is the standard bearer. Stanford had a lot of those silencing possessions. They were able to get on some miniature runs to really silence the Arizona section of this crowd. Ultimately, it didn't work out. Arizona had too many plays down the stretch, as an elite team does, to get the job done. ASU, within the first 32 to 34 minutes of this game, is going to have to do what Stanford did.
Yep.
In the silencing possessions, the threes, which for Arizona State, asking them to do that on back-to-back nights is a very tall order.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how that one transpires for the Sun Devils. Just getting those silencing possessions, and then really the stretch run, how do you deal with it? You know, I mean, it's an elite Arizona team, but they dealt with it very well in Tucson.
Yes, they did.
So Arizona State, it's not like I'm putting blind faith into a Sun Devil team against an Arizona environment that's going to be very, very rowdy. They've done this before. And yeah, the end on a half-court buzzer beater to win it, but the main takeaway was, for as you look ahead to tomorrow, they know how to deal with this environment.
Yeah.
How is it going to translate to a quote-unquote neutral site? Because, I mean, let's be real here, it's going to be like an Arizona home game in here.
100%.
We'll see, but that'll be a really fun late semifinal, Arizona and Arizona State, UCLA, Oregon, the first of those semifinals. And I'll be back the next couple of nights here on Twitter to break those down with some more of our respective Blaze sports broadcasters. For those of your preferred podcast platforms, we'll transfer you over to Nick Keneally for some of the other main action.
Nick Keneally here, bringing you some recaps from the power tournaments. Nicholas and Dylan were giving you some great Pac-12 coverage from the tournament action that they saw today live in Las Vegas. So I'm here to give you some five more conferences, starting off with the Big 12. They had their quarterfinals today where Kansas and West Virginia saw each other. Kansas, obviously one of the top teams in the nation, ranked third nationally. They came in here and dealt with West Virginia to little to no resistance, really, in this game. They won 78-61, and they held a lead for most of the game, for the last, about 75% of the game. It really wasn't a necessary runaway until halfway through the second half, when Kansas really just started getting hot. KJ Adams got hot at the right time, Grady Dick, Kevin McCuller. And that's really what you can expect when all your Kansas's players get hot, because let's be honest, when their offensive pieces are all going at the same time, they're pretty much impossible to stop. I mean, that team, led by, of course, Jalen Wilson, has so many great options that they can go to. And, you know, they were definitely going with full force here. Jalen Wilson, of course, one of the best players in the country and Kansas's leader. 22 points tonight with 11 rebounds. That's honestly something that you can expect night in, night out from him, because he's such a quality and consistent player. That's the big thing about Wilson's game, is he's consistent in what he does. You can expect him to get these buckets every night. And Grady Dick, the freshman, 18 points out of him. That was certainly an amazing performance. Texas also faced off against Oklahoma State. Texas is another one of these Big 12 programs that is one of the best in the country. And much like Kansas, they had themselves a pretty solid win as well. This one, this tone was set a lot earlier. I mean, they went into halftime with a 9-point lead, and, you know, kind of upped it. They really didn't let Oklahoma State get within 7 or 8 throughout the entirety of the second half. They just kept their foot on the gas for that 14-point win here. And it was another great team performance. I mean, you had Sir Jabari Rice with 15 points, but 11 from Dizu, 11 from Tyrese Hunter, 11 from Marcus Carr, 11 off the bench from Artero Morris. And that's really what did it for them. It was that and the inability, it seemed like, for Oklahoma State to make buckets. I mean, 27% from the field. They went 3 for 21 from 3. Those are not numbers that are going to win you a game, especially in a conference tournament. The one thing Oklahoma State did really well was rebound the ball. That was something that they really excelled in their last game against Oklahoma last night. But we mentioned how, you know, they really didn't have that good of an offensive performance. And if they do that again, they can't expect to get lucky against Texas because Texas isn't going to go cold. And that's exactly what happened. Oklahoma State couldn't really score, but they couldn't defend at all like they could against Oklahoma. So great win for Texas there. Iowa State and Baylor. Iowa State came in here and absolutely upset Baylor here. Baylor, another top 10 team in the country, coming in at 10th ranked nationally, actually dropped this one to Iowa State. This was the 4-5 game, so it wasn't necessarily a huge upset when you look at the conference ranks, but with how solid the Big 12 is, Baylor is one of the top teams in the conference and in the country. And this was a battle throughout the game. I mean, it seemed like for a little bit in the second half, Baylor had control, and then Iowa State really took over with about 7 minutes left and didn't look back at all. I mean, this was just a great game on the inside of the arc for Iowa State, where they shot 22 for 40. So great efficiency. They shot the ball from outside pretty well too, but it was really their inside scoring, their rebounding. They out-rebounded Baylor 44 to 17. With those types of margins, you can only expect that type of a W. But I mean, honestly, it was that late game rebounding that really set it up perfectly for Iowa State with their second chance points. You know, now they punched their ticket to a semifinal, which a lot of people really didn't expect with all, you know, the five remaining teams that were going to the quarterfinals that were at top 25 teams. Now Iowa State breaks right past Baylor, and we have TCU and Kansas State. TCU, one of the great Big 12 programs this year that really started off the year really slow. People were questioning their school, their program. They said that it was going to be a disappointment of a year, you know, from the first couple games where they really struggled against bad opponents, but they kicked it into high gear, and now they're going to the Big 12 semifinals, getting the win over Kansas State, a program that, you know, really came out of the blue. Very impressive season for them. They're going to be able to keep it going in the NCAA tournament, but that's going to be it for their conference tournament run as TCU took this one 80-67, and it was a 22-point performance from both Chuck O'Bannon Jr. and Mike Miles Jr., the amazing duo that they've been all season. They really came up big for them when, honestly, not a lot of other scoring options for TCU really stepped up. I mean, you had 8 off the bench from forward Jacoby Coles, but that was your next best scoring performance. I mean, it was really down to their two stars, both hitting 4 threes each. That always helps. It was just up to them, really. They passed the ball pretty well as a team, but it was the scoring of their two great stars. As we hop over to the Big East, where we had a amazing Marquette St. John's game that went to OT down to the very, very end, down to the last shot, or last free throws, I should say, at the end of OT, which pushed Marquette over the top. And this was a game that almost ended in regulation. I mean, Marquette almost won this one off of a last second three, which was missed. Almost a putback dunk, but the buzzer sounded just about 2/10 of a second before the ball went in the basket. They waved it off. OT and Marquette stuck it out. Great scoring performances throughout the team. Tyler Kolek played a whole lot of minutes this game, 39, and shot a whole lot of shots. But boy, was he hitting some of them. Mostly in big moments, though. 19 points for him. 10 points for Osa Igbaro. He went 5 for 7 with 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks. He was absolutely huge in this one. Marquette didn't shoot the ball all that well. For taking 34 threes, they only made 9 of them. They shot 26% from beyond the arc, 39% from the field in general, but it was just the volume of which they could shoot out really is what brought them over the edge here. UConn knocked out Providence. Not much of a surprise here in my eyes. UConn is one of, if not the best team in the country. They definitely had their battles in the regular season. They kind of got in a slump towards the conference late, as the Big East is a very, very great conference. But UConn played like the great, great program that they are. They played like, you know, how I expect them to play night in, night out. They led by 20, as much as 26 in this game, and, you know, they only ended up winning by 7. But, you know, they started to put some of the, you know, reserves and give them more minutes. They kind of shallowed out that lead. So, obviously, UConn didn't have the commanding victory in the final score, but it was definitely known how dominant this UConn team can be when they really lock in. Just solely from their, you know, their great, great defense. Held Providence to 26% shooting from beyond the arc, 41% from the field, and only to 25 rebounds to UConn's 35%. So UConn was out rebounding them. They shot very efficiently like they do. And that's really what led them to this great W. And, you know, especially that big second half lead was just their efficiency, and their ability to play fundamental basketball, you know, really getting those rebounds. Xavier knocked out DePaul. DePaul obviously had that great win last night over Seton Hall, one that people really didn't expect out of them, but their run has come to an end. Xavier knocked them out 89-84 as Jack Nungy, as he does, just got absolute buckets in this one. 23 points for him, 10 rebounds. He was amazing. And it was also 22 points from Colby Jones. He's been a great second option, sometimes the first option. They really kind of bounce that role between each other. But he was also lights out in this game. Just a great duo performance. DePaul scored the ball really well, shot 50% from the three, but it's just they just couldn't stop Xavier. And Creighton knocks out Villanova. Creighton, another one of those teams that kind of had a rocky start to the year but found their rhythm. Won this 87-74. This was just a great, great scoring performance from the entirety of their starting lineup. I mean, 21 from Ryan Kalkbrenner. He's been their best player. But you also had 18 from Arthur Kalumba. You had 17 from Ryan Nemhard. You had 13 from Trey Alexander, and 12 as well from Baylor Shireman. Just great scoring top to bottom from their entirety of their starting lineup. And that closes out the Big East. We're going to hop over to the Big Ten, where Rutgers knocked out Michigan. Rutgers has been a very, very solid, well-rounded team this year, and they really showed it off here, mostly in their defense, where they held Michigan to 50 points. That's always a very, very good sign when you're able to do that. Teams rarely score less than or equal to 50 points and win a game, especially in a conference tournament. And Rutgers was really able to shut them down. Decent scoring from them as well. Obviously not very efficient, but they rebounded very well, so they're able to keep putting up shots. That's what led them to this big victory right here. We also had Ohio State taking down Iowa. Iowa, one of those very streaky teams in the Big Ten. At times, they look like one of the best teams in the conference, maybe top three. And at times like this, you know, they did not look very strong. Ohio State had a great, great scoring performance from Bruce Thornton. He was amazing for them, 8 for 13 from the field. 8 for 14 from the field as well from Bryce Sensabaugh. That freshman has been big for them this year. He really came up clutch for them in this game. Penn State took down Illinois in a game that, you know, many expected Illinois to win. Penn State, obviously, you know, they won that season series 2-0 in the regular season. So they got their third victory over Illinois, who obviously higher seed, but, you know, Penn State seems to have their number. And it was behind 20 points from Andrew Funk. More great scoring throughout their starting lineup by Cameron Winter with 18 points. That's really where they got a lot of their they really got their win from, was their great offensive performance. Shut down Illinois necessarily in terms of their efficiency. Illinois shot 64 times from the field, so when you give up that many shots, you kind of have to be a little bit careful, but they really weren't making the three ball at a high rate. And Maryland took down Minnesota in a game that's not surprising to many. Maryland has been, you know, red hot at times in this season, and it looks like they're red hot here. 70-54, really shut down Minnesota on the offensive side of the ball and out-rebounded them. Maryland had a great 20-point performance from Dante Scott. That's what pushed them past them. Jumping over to the SEC, Tennessee took down Ole Miss. Not very surprising as well. Tennessee has been a very, very great team. It's great to see them still getting pretty good victories in the wake of the Zakai Ziegler ACL tear that's going to put them out for the rest of the season. Obviously a big hurt. They lost their last and only game without him in the regular season at the very end to Auburn. So great to see them bounce back, show that, you know, they still can function as a team, run their offense pretty smoothly without him. Behind 20 points from Desai Jordan James and 15 from Viscovia as well. They're a great duo right there, and we're able to push them past Ole Miss. A very, very close overtime game for Mississippi State versus Florida. Mississippi State was able to stick this one out, though, 69-68. I mean, this was an absolutely great game. A game that it looked like Mississippi State had pretty solid control of in the first half. I mean, they led by as much as 14 in that, but they let Florida have a great, great second half. And they send it to OT, hoping to get that that win, that comeback win. But Mississippi State was able to close it out behind 28 points, 12 rebounds, 3 steals from Tolu Smith. He's really their saving factor in this. Arkansas takes down Auburn. It was mostly the freshman Anthony Black that put up 19 points in this victory for them. Another 14 from Nick Smith Jr. as well, another great freshman. The freshman duo did most of the scoring in terms of the starting lineup and, you know, gave them the necessary points. Obviously, 3-point game. Super, super close one, but Auburn just couldn't stick it out. I mean, they were down pretty much the whole game. Got it close near the end. Maybe their first lead of the game, but it was just a big, big jumper from Nick Smith Jr. at the end of the game to really seal the deal in that one. That also brings us to the last SEC game of the night, which was Vanderbilt LSU. A very, very solid Vanderbilt win from them, 77-68. Neither team could really score the ball super efficiently. I mean, Vanderbilt's 27% from the three matched with LSU's 26%. Wasn't necessarily a great offensive performance from either team. A lot of rebounding on both sides. But, you know, it was 22 points from Tyron Lawrence that pushed Vanderbilt over the edge in this one. We're going to jump over the ACC for the last conference of the night. Virginia taking the big W over North Carolina. Virginia has been one of the most, you know, consistent teams in this conference this season. They've had some pretty big wins, but North Carolina was really hoping to have a good performance in the ACC tournament to try to boost their resume odds, as they didn't do the best during the regular season, hoping to get into the NCAA tournament. But I mean, that might have just killed their hopes right here with that quarterfinal loss. Virginia 68, North Carolina 59. It was 17 points from Jaden Gardner. He's been such a bucket for them this season, which pushed them over the edge. Miami took down Wake Forest in a close one. Miami 74, Wake Forest 72. And this is, you know, back-to-back really close games for Wake Forest. They barely stuck out that Syracuse game with that last-second shot, but they just couldn't get it done over a very strong Miami team. Would have been huge for Wake Forest, but Miami is just way too solid. 18 points out of Jordan Miller. It was 17 points out of Isaiah Wong as well. Just a great, great backcourt duo there. They were really able to come up big when they were needed. 7 for 10 shooting for Wong, 8 for 6 from Jordan Miller. I mean, they were taking a majority of the shots for Miami, especially late in the game. Duke took down Pittsburgh by a wide margin, 96-69. This was clear from the tip-off that this was Duke's game. I mean, Pitt didn't even lead for a second. Duke got their first three by Filipowski 20 seconds in the game, and it was just off to the races. And you know, the lead really didn't get diminished at all in this one. It was exponential how Duke was scoring. Just kept getting better and better until, you know, they won this game by, 27 points, led by as much as 36. This was absolutely Duke's game. Filipowski got it going early. 22 points for him on 8 for 10 shooting. Hit 4 threes. He was big for them. And not a lot of starters minutes. They really went deep into their rotation. They played 14 players in this game, as, you know, rest up your big players for the semifinals matchup. Clemson took down NC State by a wide margin, and this is an NC State that a lot of people were picking, including me, to be a sleeper team to squeak it into the semifinals, maybe get a championship appearance, and it looked pretty evident after their big blowout win against Virginia Tech, but that came to a screeching halt against Clemson tonight. Clemson took this 26-point win behind a 15-point performance from Ian Sheflin, 15-point performance from PJ Hall, another game where they really just reached deep into their bench. 14 players played for them as well. Just an absolutely great performance from them on the defensive side of the ball. Held NC State to 21 for 60 shooting, 5 for 20 from the three. That's always going to do it for you as a team, and that's also going to do it for me on my side of things. That was the Power Conference's recap of the night. Hope you guys enjoyed this one, and for Nick and Ely, have a great night.